This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, our guest is David Eisenman. We're talking about his proposal for a modest cell phone law. Now, David, how did you get interested in the way people use cell phones as they drive and they walk and walk around campus and through the city streets? What got your attention?
You know how it is when you go away for a while and your wife is left with the small children and you come back after a weekend and say, "Heaven's sake, Hugh's head has a whole new shape." And she says, "What in the world are you talking about?" Sometimes when you don't do something for a while or where you don't look at a situation regularly, you notice a change more than people who are there all the time and constantly alert. I almost don't drive. My car that I drove here today is a 1981 car that hasn't yet hit 100,000 miles. That's something like a third the national average miles per year per car. So I began noticing on those few occasions when I do drive things about driver behavior and about pedestrian behavior that I think other people kind of gradually become alert to. And I have become increasingly sensitive to the bonehead things people do when they're jabbering into cell phones, beginning with, by the way, pedestrians stepping off the curb right in front of you in the middle of a block.
So you've noticed these things, and you wrote an article about it that appeared in the local paper back in late October. And in that article, you gave several particular incidents. Give us one of those.
Well, sure. I'll start with a relatively benign one. I'm heading to my office at the YMCA, where I do a few things related to scholarships. You know that because you are my boss. Anyway, on the way to the Y, coming south, I guess, on 6th Street, which is a one-way street, I find myself behind a person who seems to be trying to parallel park but is exceptionally inept. You know, I wait. There's traffic in the other lane. I can't go around this person. He backs up, comes forward, never seems to get in. Then I realize this person is attempting to parallel park, which, of course, goes back and forth between reverse and first, presumably, while also talking on the phone. Now, think about, you know, this means one hand at most on the steering wheel and one hand that keeps passing the phone back and forth because you have to shift. And I thought, my goodness, this is extraordinary. But that one's benign. How about I'm stopped at a stop light and the light turns? It's my time to go. I start into the intersection and a person accelerates at me, also from a stop position in the cross street, coming right at me. I'm scared out of my mind. Person puts on the brakes. I put on my brakes. I realize he's on the phone and he's still on the phone. So I go over and I gently knock on his window and I say, "Hang up!" In a nice soft tone of voice, of course. And he doesn't. So I repeat that with a little more emphasis. And at this point, he boils out of the car, clearly ready to pound me into the ground. And I recognize a top university official at the University of Illinois. What I want to say to him is, you've just demonstrated beyond a shadow of a doubt that you can't both drive and talk on the phone, so I hope you'll never do it again. Maybe somebody can, but you can't. But I'm a little smarter than that. I just say, I really think that you shouldn't drive and phone. And then I went away. But that was my first actual confrontation with a person on the cell phone who either frightened me to death or actually put my life at risk.
Now the city of Chicago, as you know and our listeners may know, has a law for the city that you're not supposed to be on the telephone, not on a cell phone, if it involves you using either of your hands. You can be on a speakerphone. And there was a news story just last week about the fact that that's been challenged because there weren't enough signs put up around the city letting people know who were coming through the town that this was a local law, and yet the city was arresting these folks, and or not maybe not arresting, but giving them tickets and raising a lot of money that way. Now, you're not proposing that that Champaign-Urbana or Champaign County or the state of Illinois have that sort of a law. Why not?
Well, I've watched the total inaction in our community in Champaign County since a year and now 3 months ago when a fine young man out on his bicycle in the country was killed by a young woman who explains that she was downloading ringtones onto her cell phone, lost track of the fact that she had gone off the road and managed to run into him. He was 6 feet off the road. She killed him. And yet we have done nothing. And I think I know why. And it's because newspaper editors and doctors and lawyers and opinion makers, legislators for certain, in this community are all in the habit of talking on the phone while driving. In fact, Tim Johnson, our local congressman, was famous for having a cell phone long before anyone else and being on the phone almost constantly when driving at 80 miles an hour on rural roads in Champaign County. So I don't think that people who think they're safe while driving on the cell phone have come to terms with how unsafe they are. They think it's somebody else's problem. Therefore, I don't think banning cell phones, frankly, is a position that has any hope. So I've come up with a rather different idea. It seems to me what we all know, and we all do know this, I'd like to have anybody call in who doubts it, is that we are, to some extent, every one of us, impaired if we're on the phone while driving. So my suggestion is that if you make any mistake, if you fail to put a turn signal on, if you go through a stop sign, if you run a red light, if you have an accident and you are on the phone, automatically we fine you $250 for the aggravating fact that you were on the phone. It doesn't even matter if it wasn't your fault. You know, if legally it was somebody else's fault, we fine you. And by the way, I would apply this to anyone who is in a Champaign County roadway. That means walking, on a bicycle, on a motorcycle, in a wheelchair. However you're in the road, if you're in the road, you shouldn't be talking on the phone. That's my proposed law. But somebody might want to ask this question, why are we talking about this on something called keeping the faith? So how did you justify bringing me here today,
well,
Shoemaker?
When I first read your article, your proposed article early on, I thought, well, this is dealing with very practical ethics. This is the way we're involved in the community. What responsibility do we have to others? And frankly, I use the phone a lot. And I think I use it carefully, but there have been times when I've realized, oh, I'm 10 blocks farther than I realized I was.
Mm-hmm.
So it
ethics.
Had
so the topic
thing.
Is ethics.
I think so.
Good. Well, we should say a word about ethics because there are personal ethics. What should I do? And then there's sort of what sorts of positions should I support for my community to embrace as something we can all count on each other to do? And I think that what's fun about the cell phone test case in a way is that these two come together in a very intriguing way. Very often, I think, we're willing to do something, but kind of only if other people will too. It's tough to unilaterally disarm. So I guess let's challenge our listeners tonight. I'm challenging you to give a Christmas present and make a New Year's resolution. And here it is. The present is make us all safer by not talking on your cell phone while you're driving or as a pedestrian while you're walking across streets. And as a New Year's resolution, well, agree to do that. I think my own little bit of experience, again, I don't drive much. I already said that. My News Gazette article listed 6 incidents in which I felt my life was at risk, or at least my health was at risk. I could have had a heart attack due to extraordinarily bad behavior on the part of people who are on cell phones and driving. If I can have made this many observations in the little bit of driving I do, it seemed to me pretty clear, and also based upon what I keep reading in the paper about other horrible things happening, that we all sort of know better than to think that we can talk on the phone while driving.
Well, let me invite our listeners to join the conversation. This is a live call-in show every Sunday night from 5 to 6 p.m. Central Time here on WILL. And Keeping the Faith is eager to have listeners call in with comments, experiences, questions, or disagreements, arguments. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455, 333-WILL. if you're listening to this, perhaps even on the internet, if it's a long-distance call, do use a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. So, long-distance call, 1-800-222-WILL is a toll-free call. It's in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Well, let me argue a little bit, David, with your modest proposal. When you drive, do you ever listen to the radio?
Sure.
And doesn't that distract you? You like music. You listen to it. You're involved with it. Why isn't that an equally dangerous distraction?
It's a good question. And by the way, it's the most common response I got when I sort of field tested this proposal before sending it off to the News Gazette. People gave me even more challenging examples than merely listening to the radio. They said, how about adjusting the radio? How about having a CD in and deciding you want to hear track 12? So you're sort of reaching over and punching at those buttons.
And looking down at a number to see what track you're on. Right.
I think there's no question. I guess my simple answer to your question is that I've never caught myself, as you mentioned, you find yourself 10 blocks beyond where you were headed. It doesn't necessarily mean you were unsafe in the meantime, but it does show you were distracted. I've never caught myself distracted by the radio. I have caught myself distracted adjusting the radio. And on those occasions when I did have a cassette or a CD in the car and was putting it in or taking it out or trying to make some adjustment, I am aware that I looked away from the road, and by golly, the guy in front of me, you know, fortunately 50 feet ahead, has been braking, and I'm a lot closer to him than I thought I might be. So I wouldn't at all deny the existence of other distractions. And the kind of root question underlying your remark is, why single out cell phone behavior? And I guess it's because, as a driver watching other drivers, the worst things I've seen anybody do in the last 5 years invariably involved somebody clearly on the phone. Now, maybe they were just bad drivers before, and I would have sworn at them, but I wouldn't have been able to pin it on the phone. Nevertheless, the extremely high correlation between somebody on the phone and somebody doing a really dumb thing led me to feel that there is something special about cell phone use.
Well, now, when we're using a cell phone, we can be using it without hands-free. There are ways to do that. There are speaker phones and so forth. There are attachments you can get for your car, and people spend a lot of time in their car. I know often have those. In that sense, might that even it out? So that would just be like you're having a conversation with someone sitting beside you in the passenger seat or in the back seat. You're not necessarily looking at them. You're carrying on a conversation. You're talking. Both your hands are available to respond to an emergency if you have to change directions or whatever. What do you think about that?
I think there is a difference. When somebody's in the car with you, very often that person, voluntarily or involuntarily, is acting a little bit as a co-pilot. I know that we all have a tendency to be backseat drivers in the front seat. So at least there are two sets of eyes on the road. The other thing is, very often when we're riding with somebody, we may well be chatting, but may also be silent. In any case, we've agreed to be in the car together. Assume most of the time, I think emotional states are low. Although I've seen people having fights in cars and driving badly, that can occur.
Or having children misbehaving so badly, whether beside you or in the back seat, more typically these days, that it's really hard to concentrate on what you're doing.
That may well be. And having had a couple of small children in front and back seats in my day, I know that that can be distracting. But, you know, we pull it over to the curb as soon as we can with a child who's out of control. The interesting thing about phone calls in a car is that you have to ask yourself, what kind of call do you take or make while driving? And I'm afraid the answer for older people, maybe not for kids, is pretty important call. And important calls may also be emotionally laden. I don't know. I'm just guessing here. All I can tell you is my observation is people with their faces in cell phones seem to me to commit most of the mistakes that I see while I'm driving.
Give us another example.
Well, okay. The fact that this has happened twice astonishes even me. I love that one-way street, 6th Street. It's a great way to get to our office. On one occasion, I was up by the psychology building, and I watched a young woman, as it turned out to be, turn north into 6th Street, which is, of course, one way south. And she turned, of course, into the right lane. I happened to be in what to her was the right lane. It was my left lane because I was going to make a left turn. And she came. She was not looking at the road more than 30 feet in front of her. I just kept coming at her very slowly. I could have moved to the other lane, but I thought the quickest way to alert her to the fact that she's going the wrong way is to be coming right at her. Well, she didn't see me until we were 20 feet apart when she finally looked up beyond the front of her car, and I could then see that she was on the phone. She immediately pulled over across the other lane without even looking to see if anyone was in it and pulled into one of the parallel parking spots. So I merely pulled behind her to block her, rapped on her window, and gave her my little speech, which is maybe some people can both drive and talk, but she has just proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that she can't. And I hope she takes that lesson to heart and never talks on the phone again while driving. And she looked appropriately chagrined, and there was, I suppose, a 0.2% chance that she actually will not talk on the phone again. But it can't have been more than 6 months later that a block further north on that same street, a similar thing happened. This time, somebody came in from Daniel instead of Chalmers, turned north on a street that's one way south, at a pretty good speed, I might add, and kept coming right at me by the Royal Cafe until he was within 5 feet of me and then slammed on his brakes. Now, this was a young man with a car full of friends, also on the phone, and he ducked, fortunately, into the loading zone to my left, scraped the curb, but barely got by me, pulled into the parking lot behind the chancellor's office, and I just kind of waited by good old coffee place. So he finally came back in, turned the correct way, went by me. And as you know, the warren of one-way streets we have on campus at the moment meant that I followed him for some 6 blocks, constantly turning corners. Eventually, I ended up behind him at a light, and I got out and rapped on his window and gave what is by now my standard speech, which is maybe somebody can drive while talking. But he said, well, I'm not on the phone. I said, you were on the phone when you came directly at me on 6th Street a few minutes ago and didn't seem to even notice that there was a car coming directly at you. Interestingly, everyone in that car was quiet, totally silent, and again, polite. But I have to tell you about yet another sort of one-way street experience. This one was now going north on, I guess this is Randolph, yes, Randolph in Champaign. I was approaching the Green Street corner. I wanted to make a left turn, and so I was in the left lane. And it was raining, but the light turned 2 or 3 car lengths before the corner. I wasn't going very fast, so I just continued. And then I heard a screeching sound, and a car slid into the intersection directly in front of me, clearly going through a red light. Driver on the cell phone. So I sat there and waited. He had missed me, and I was not yet into the intersection, but I was a few feet from the front of his car. And he sat, and I realized he can't figure out how to back up because his hand is on the cell phone that he needs to shift with. Finally, he backed out of the intersection whose red light he had run, and I pulled right in front of him, got out of my car, pounded on his window, suggested that he hang up. And all these people, by the way, not the second kid who had gone the wrong way in the one-way street, but all these people don't even hang up after they have done a bonehead thing. You'll love this one. He gave me the finger and continued to talk. To him, I was a terrible intrusion on his phone call. How could I possibly want to go through my green light and make a left turn? You know, naturally, I called in his license plate to the police. But, of course, this does no good. Unless they see a violation, there is no violation that they can pursue.
Now, let me repeat for listeners who might have joined us later. You're talking about the dangers of cell phone use for people who are driving or walking or in the roadways one way or the other. And you're not saying absolutely forbid it, like some cities such as Chicago have done. You're saying that if you're in an accident, if you've made a mistake, if you're stopped for a traffic violation, for example, and you're on the phone, there's an additional $250 fine. Now, you said when you were explaining that earlier, you think this might have the possibility of being passed because legislators and people in the community might support something It's relatively modest.
Well, they also think it applies to somebody else. Yeah. They think they can drive safely while on the phone. It's these boneheads that can't do it, and they don't think there are very many of them. A friend who has looked at this proposal, a lawyer in California, has a related suggestion. He thinks it should become part of the state police and local police accident report that you automatically ask the driver, were you on the phone at the time of this accident? And you take their answer, but you also routinely require them to give you any cell phone numbers that are registered to them or the numbers of any cell phones they regularly use. And as a research project, we would have somebody simply check the phone records and see if at the time of the accident that phone was in use.
Uh-huh.
We don't know yet. We don't have good statistics. People are beginning to build them. It does look as if cell phone use is as dangerous as falling asleep behind the wheel, and we all know that that's dangerous. But we don't really have the data that we might gather if we started finding people when they make a mistake while on the phone or have an accident. For example, one very aggravating thing that we've all experienced is you come to a four-way stop. We all know the person, if several people stop at the same time, the one to the right should be the one to go first. If people come in at different times, of course, order of entry into the four-way turn is the order for going out. People on cell phones always lose track of whose turn it is, and we all sit there with lines of cars behind us waiting for someone to go, and then two people invariably go at the same time. I'd love to have a policeman be in the intersection and whack somebody for being on the phone and losing track.
Well, that does happen, but we also know, as it has been reported several times, that in Urbana, people wait at four-way stops out of politeness. We have a caller on one of our lines. Others would like to call 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere 1-800-222-9455 for a toll-free call. Yes, line number one, you're on the air with David Eisenman.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have one question. Do you think we get distracted because... Oh, dear. Sorry for just a moment.
That's all right.
Yes.
What were you saying?
This culture moves so fast. Do you think that's the reason that we get distracted?
Oh, okay. Thank you for the question. So, that the calls happen so fast that people feel like, well, I'm not going to be on the phone long. I'm just going to say, yes, I'll be there. Or, I'm sorry I'm late or whatever.
Some people certainly think that it's nice to call the wife on the way home from work and find out what groceries to buy. And if you're stuck in traffic and the car isn't moving, I suppose we could all agree that it would seem that you could make a safe call. The trouble is you start what you think is going to be a short call, and then it turns into a long one, and now it's your turn to make a decision, and there you are, both on the phone and driving. I do agree. I think a lot of people think they can make a quick call, just get something settled, and get back to the driving, but it doesn't tend to work out that way.
Now, I've read some research, and this is very preliminary, but I've read some research that more accidents are caused when someone's cell phone rings who's driving, and they're fumbling for it, trying to answer it, or it startles them. I don't know how accurate that is, but I have read at least one report of a study that it seemed to indicate that.
I readily believe it. I think we leap into the car, the cell phone's in our pocket. We haven't planned ahead. I know friends who put their cell phones on vibrate. They put them in their pants pocket, and their intention, they make up their mind before they start driving, is I will note that it has buzzed. I am not going to answer it, but I will pull off the road at the next opportunity, find out who called.
Exactly. See if it's an emergency.
Sure. Right. And that discipline goes a long way. But, you know, we're entering an interesting era. And here, by the way, is a second part of why I'm worried about this. People made the point after Matt Wilhelm was killed that we really need to do something and we need to do it right away. Well, here it is a year and 3 months and we haven't done a thing. What lesson are we teaching our young drivers? It seems to me the lesson is, gee, if it were really dangerous, by now they would have done something. Uh-huh. So it must not be dangerous.
We have another caller again on line number one with David Eisenman. Go ahead, please.
Hi there. Thanks for your show. I generally enjoy it.
Well, thank you.
I'm not sure that I can say that this evening. I'm wondering if you would consider talking about, as long as you move this towards ethics, hopefully at some point, how about render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, or render unto God that which is God's?
And how do you, how does that apply to the cell phone issue? And
I'm wondering if it doesn't apply to whether or not we're awfully tied up in resentments and the world in this conversation, in contrast to that which is God's.
Well, a good question. This program seems to be about faith, and how is your use of a cell phone related to faith? I guess it. I would just call attention to the Golden Rule. Again, I didn't think we were doing a theological program. I thought it was an ethical program today. But render under God that which is God's, and to Caesar that which is Caesar's is certainly a good division. But even in the course of civil, utterly secular matters, there are issues of ethics. And here at the Golden Rule, which is common to a number of faiths, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, I guess, is the appeal I would make. I really wish the other drivers on the road, when I'm on the road, would be paying attention to the road. I know I'm distractible. I don't think I'm a particularly good driver, and because of that, I tried to be alert to the condition of my car, the condition of my mind when I am driving. But I'm appalled at the death and destruction. 2 weeks ago, a young man on the phone walked right past a walk.
I'm going to want to hang up.
That's fine.
Sure.
But before I do that, I would like to say I really think that you might want to work on the depth of your resentments that were around driving.
Right.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. So we do get resentful of people who we think are putting us in danger.
Yes, I'd have to ponder that. I did start by saying I'm not much of a driver. I try to avoid
but
driving.
But you don't want to become a vigilante. Either.
No, no. And in fact, quite to the contrary, I've tried to be balanced. Let me tell you my most recent experience. I've been in two vehicles driven by professional drivers within the last week. One was a limousine driver from here to Chicago because I took a trip. And another was a private driver for a person I was visiting in California who had to get us through very difficult San Francisco traffic. Both drivers used base-to-vehicle radios, and the second driver used a cell phone while driving. This is amusing. The worst mistake that my limousine driver made was somebody asked him to turn the heat down on the bus, and in reaching for the heat lever, he leaned enough so that the bus ran over out of our right-hand lane and onto the kind of bumpy pavement that the state uses to warn us that we're not in our lane. We were not in danger, but there's no question he was distracted and no question that his driving went down in quality, even though he's a multi-year bus driver, lots of professional experience. He knew what to do. He was slightly off the road, and he got himself back on the road. The limo driver, I actually questioned about his use of the cell phone, and he was, definitely offended. He was absolutely certain that he could use the cell phone while driving. But I'd like to point out that he did have a hands-free cell phone and made a big point about that.
Uh-huh.
And every driving instructor that we've ever had makes a big point about two hands on the wheel as much as possible.
We have another caller, this time on line number two. You're on Keeping the Faith with David Eisenman.
Even click and clack say to put two hands on the wheel. So, I mean, it's pretty pervasive. And I guess back to the previous caller, I mean, these people have serious disregard for human life. I mean, that certainly is a sign of our culture. I guess I'd like to know how many people have not had virtually scared for the life experience, because to me it just seems rampant. Thank you.
I do think this is interesting. I almost wish that the previous caller would call back and tell us whether he is really of the opinion that we can, most of us, drive safely while on a cell phone. Why does he not think this is an ethical issue? Again, my professional driver swore to me that he could drive safely on the phone. But again, until we start collecting statistics, even the safest driver would have to admit that he is a little bit more distracted, a little less aware of where he is and what other drivers are doing when he's engaged in an intense conversation, even on a cell-free phone. There are many distractions, and professional drivers have learned to deal with them better than those of us who just drive a bit each day and not always in the same place. But I do think it's an issue, and there are many issues related to being a driver. The last caller reminded us that we've become incredibly selfish. We think we're entitled to get in our car, go anywhere, anytime. So we go out on a superhighway right after a snow, and because the speed limit says 60, we think we can go 60. I don't know if you've ever been on a New York State highway right after a snowfall, but the people from New York know better. The people not from New York spin out in every direction. I've gotten off superhighways to drive among the natives in start-and-stop parallel highways because the driving, frankly, is more sensible. We're not good at this, and we somehow or other don't think we have any obligation to get better, which is scary.
Well, we're talking with David Eisenman, and David mentioned that he works part-time at the Y in addition to other things, but he's the director of the Bailey Scholarship Program at the Y that's been going on for how many years, David?
This is our 50th, I believe.
So back in 57, Fred Bailey, who was president of the Champaign National Bank, that's now part of the, through various mergers and acquisitions, part of Busey Bank, gave a bunch of money to help students at the university and wanted the Y, University YMCA to be the group that passed that money out. Tell us how you decide which students get a scholarship. And it is free money. It's not a loan. It's actual gift.
We're doing it the same way we did in 1957. Students write an autobiographical essay. They get recommendation letters from a couple of people, and they give us some information about their financial need, their plans, etc. These are all read by members of a committee, so no computer is involved in the processing. It's still on paper, although you get the paper by printing it on your own home computer these days. But the form is the same effectively as it was in 1957, and basically Fred Bailey wanted to help find young moral people, and we interpret that as being people who have an interest in helping others and making the world a better place. And that can be demonstrated any one of a number of ways, including volunteer activity.
And there's no religious test.
No religious test.
People can be Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, Jewish, or of no religion. But if they show some, can give some evidence of some concern for others in practical ways, they qualify.
Yeah. We have a maximum award of $3,000 and
per year,
and we are able to assist people for up to 5 years. This year we'll help some 70 to 80 people. Some years it's fewer, some years it's more. But it's been a satisfying thing to work on. And Fred is a fine example of a person who behaved in an ethical way, wanted the world to get better, and left his wealth to make the world better. He left exactly $1 million. Well, it was $1,006,000. Two-thirds of the income from the trust he set up in that year come to us. Shall we get back to...
And all of it has to be used for scholarships.
That's correct.
So people who know students at the University of Illinois...
Who may be struggling financially.
Who may be coming here as first-year students next year and for whom a scholarship would be very welcome, do check out the Y website, universityymca.org. Look for Bailey Scholarship, and you'll get a link right to the application. If you don't have access that way, do call the Y at 217-337-1500. You can talk to me, Steve Shoemaker, or leave a message for David Eisenman, which is spelled E-I-S...
E-N-M-A-N. Like Eisenhower, but it ends in man.
Eisenman. But today we're talking about cell phone use and traffic and David's modest proposal that there be a $250 fine added if you're on a roadway, either walking or in a vehicle, and you're using a cell phone and you make a mistake involved in an accident or arrested for something else or fined for something else. Now, David, let me raise the issue. These days, a cell phone is just one little thing that people might have in their car. I have an object, and many people do. I can check my email on my cell phone.
Let me tell you about the guy I was behind. I can watch YouTube
on my cell phone.
Yes,
while
you can.
It's in my pocket.
I became aware of that. I didn't know cell phones had that feature until I was behind a fellow who went over the center line of the road and then hit the curb and then wandered back sort of into the middle of the lane in front of me about 4 years ago going south on State Street. He pulled into the left turn lane at Kirby, and I was behind him. I also wanted to turn left. When the light pointed left, he didn't move. And when he finally did, leaving me behind, I noticed that he's looking at a cell phone. He isn't just listening to it. He has it in his hand, and everyone else in the car is looking at it, too. Hence the wandering across the road. Now, look, our earlier caller who was worried that I have something against drivers maybe needs to hear a story that I think is important for us all to contemplate. A friend of mine was in Denmark 30 years ago and attended a pleasant evening party, had a glass of wine in the course of other conversation and hors d'oeuvres. And then he said, well, it's time for me to go home. And they said, how are you going to get there? And he said, well, drive. You know, I drove over. And they said, no, you're not. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, you had a glass of wine. We saw you. He said, well, heaven's sake, that was an hour ago. I mean, my blood alcohol's got to be well below. And they said, you don't understand. We passed a law here that your blood alcohol has to be zero. Now, I'd like to follow the parallel here. The Danes love to drink. Love to drink. They also love to drive. They also noticed that an awful lot of the people who die or are wounded out on the road are involved with somebody who has been drinking and driving. And they came to a national consensus, and I'd like you to notice that this isn't the police talking to my friend. These are people at a party. The best laws are the laws that we all, possibly grudgingly, but that we all acknowledge incorporate something that we know to be true and probably all ought to do. Here's the place where you move from individual ethics, I make a pledge that I'm not going to talk on my phone while driving, to saying, let's all agree that this really makes the world better. Is that call so terribly important that you shouldn't pull over to the curb and make it? Is your checking of the weather so important that you can't wait to the next rest stop to go and get out your cell phone and download weather information on the road? It's a question of looking at the facts, thinking about how you should behave and how you wish everyone else should behave, and asking yourself, are we ready for a political consensus? And all I'm saying in my proposal is we're not ready for a political consensus that would punish you for just being on the phone, but maybe we're ready for a consensus that would punish you for being on the phone and making a mistake that puts other people's lives at risk. That's where I arrived at my proposal.
When I was younger, I will confess, and I've been told confession is good for the soul, that I was a very good driver. And I was so good that if I got an idea that I was afraid I would lose, I would pick up a piece of paper while driving and write that idea down. It might be for a poem, it might be for a sermon, it might be for an article, it might be just something I needed to do. A lot of people have to-do lists that are beside their bed when they sleep, and when they drive, they have it. Now we have electronic versions of that with all these fancy machines that may be connected to a cell phone or maybe separate. Plus we have a GPS that we may be driving and looking at telling us where to turn next. Some of those have an audio feature, so there's this nice pleasant voice that says, take a left at the next turn, but others of them you have to look at and actually read. I think the situation has gotten more complicated because of our electronics, but I'm not sure it's that different from back when 40 years ago I was writing a very good poem while I was driving between here and Chicago.
I know people even today who read books while driving cars. They have a reading rack set up between themselves and the windshield, and they look at the road, look at the book, look at the road. I find all of this problematic. Even those people are smart enough not to keep reading when the traffic begins to tighten up. If you're all by yourself on a straight road, nobody behind you, nobody in front of you for a great distance, and big, wide, visible spaces on both sides, everyone can see the temptation. But things happen awfully quickly, and it's a judgment. And again, I wouldn't forbid anybody from doing anything. But I think if it can be shown after you've killed somebody or rolled your car over or smashed another car that you were, in fact, distracted and voluntarily so at the time of the accident, you ought to be able to face up to the fact that you were distracted. And we ought to have a way to keep statistics on the level of distraction that you were at the time of your accident. We don't know how well we can multi-process. We have a great sense that we can multi-process, but we're usually wrong. I have a friend who built a device, which is a so-called random reminder, beeps at random times. And this is highly useful for people who divide their time between several activities to find out what percent of my time am I actually a scientist and what percentage of my time am I managing my lab, you know? So if when it beeps, you're talking to a colleague about his research, well, that's management. And if when it beeps, you're doing your experiment, well, then you're a scientist. Give one of those things to a teenager who thinks that he can do homework and watch TV. And he quickly finds out that 9 out of 10 times when it beeps, he was not doing homework. He was watching TV. Until we make some studies of the level of attention that we're giving to each of the tasks we're engaged in, when one of them is something like driving, we don't really know how safe we are, how fast we could react to a surprise. So I don't know. I mean, you probably were reasonably sensible about writing your thing down. You didn't instantly. Again, the cell phone ringing and distracting you, we can all see that. That is really. By the way, when those little voices came on and said, fasten your seatbelt or turn right at the next corner, if you get into a car and you don't know it has that feature, when those features first came on, people crashed cars. They thought that some stranger had gotten in the car with them, stalking to them from the back seat. Those cases were reported in the press. We do get used to technology, but I'm not sure we're getting better at multitasking.
Let me give the phone numbers again for listeners who'd like to join the conversation, report one of their experiences, or disagree with our guest, which is encouraged as well as agreement. 333-9455 is the local Champaign-Urbana number. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, you might be listening to this program online at WILL.illinois.edu, at the website for keeping the for AM radio. You may use the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. We have a couple callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, they've got these things that that allow you to get some have them at state fairs. The police, state police, have them, where you get to experience what it's like to be in a quick, in a very fast stop, so that you feel what it's like, would be like if you didn't have your seatbelt on.
Yes.
And that seems to me to be one of the things that may convince people to wear seatbelts. I'm wondering if there might be something that a safety organization could develop that where people could see whether they were being distracted by cell phones or not.
So it's an excellent suggestion. And I think that the driver training courses in our high schools and elsewhere are beginning to incorporate some of the same technology that airplane pilots have been subjected to for years. You know, a flight simulator. You get in and suddenly there's a plane in front of you and you have to decide what to do. Doing this with automobiles would be equally useful. I just wish that we had a driver training requirement that kept up with the level of distraction that our cars can throw at us. But I think that's an excellent suggestion.
Well, we could have it at licensing facilities.
Exactly.
Which you had, and you had to experience it before you could have your license either issued or renewed.
Yes, it's a good suggestion.
I've seen bicycle riders zipping through intersections, talking on their cell phone, managing to stay upright on their bicycles.
But with one hand on the handlebar, which we all know, it just takes one pebble and you've wiped out in front of a car. Yes, I've seen the same thing.
And it's not just doing this. Even just walking around and talking on the cell phone, which I have done at times, but I only do it when I'm in a long straightaway and I'm not going to be crossing streets, et cetera. There was a young woman who was murdered in a parking lot. She was kidnapped and then murdered, and she was talking on the cell phone to her boyfriend when she was snatched.
Mm.
She was not paying attention to the world around her. And it seems to me that one of the other things about cell phones and about all this stuff about iPods and having earphones in our ears is that we're not paying attention to and appreciating everything that's going on around us, whether or not it has to do with safety, but we don't notice the rest of our world. And it seems rather a shame to feel like we have to be constantly doing things and not letting the world enter our consciousness on a serendipitous sort of basis. Why we have to be constantly talking to friends and parents, etc. So that's my two cents.
Very good contribution. Thanks so much for calling. And we have another caller, two actually waiting. Let's go to line number two. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi. Interesting show. I agree with your guest. I'm not sure what social consequences we're eventually going to have, but I think the main thing is people shouldn't mistake themselves for computers. If you practice a martial art or any art form or you go to school and things like that, you rapidly learn that trying to do more than one thing is actually less productive. I mean, you know, doing more than one thing is less productive than doing one thing at a time, which is taught in many spiritual traditions, that you should be mindful, you should be focused, you should be paying attention to who you are, where you are, and what you're doing, instead of trying to do many things. And I think people in our world could just benefit from that simple thing. You're not a computer. You can't multitask. Do one thing at a time and do it well. And when it comes to driving, I think cell phones are just the tip of the iceberg. I think there's such a wide variety of discourteous driving. It's kind of shocking. Now, when I moved here in 1972, I think there was a standard joke that you had to look out for professors and farmers in this town because professors weren't paying attention and farmers were driving slowly. But nowadays, it just seems there's some very urban habits, people running stop signs, people crowding behind you, people going way beyond the speed limit, which to my mind just is another thing that adds to the danger, I think, the general level of courtesy. So I'm very glad to hear about this, and I'll get off the phone. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution. And we have another caller waiting on line number three. Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes. There's an interesting study by Daniel Simmons here at UIUC about perception and multitasking. One of his experiments dealt with, he asked people to watch people playing basketball and to count how many times the basketball was passed around. And people were pretty good at counting the number of times, but almost all of them missed a person in a gorilla suit walking across the sea, waving his arms and then walking off. People were so obsessed with watching the basketball that they missed this gorilla walking by.
that's a great study. I love it.
And that's by Daniel Simmons, and he's at UIUC.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the call.
You're welcome.
I can't resist telling a story about iPods. A friend who previewed my News Gazette op-ed called me in great glee, but also some dismay, from Palo Alto. He said that he had just been to a garage sale and the fellow selling things and he were chatting. And he said the other day, said this seller, he was driving down a shaded Palo Alto street and he reached an intersection. He saw a jogger approaching the intersection from the cross street and he was sure the jogger saw him. He had no stop sign. The jogger did. He was sure the fellow would stop, but he ran right in front of his car, and he had to slam his brakes on. It was Steve Jobs with an iPod on. So how about the irony of that? If we see Steve Jobs leave this earth because he was a distracted jogger on his own iPod, I suppose then finally maybe we might pay some attention to the degree to which even Steve Jobs can multitask.
Surely that's an urban legend.
He showed me the guy. I was just out there, and he pointed the house of the guy. I didn't go, and all right. We'll call it urban legend. Fair enough.
When When this article appeared in the paper, what kind of response did you get to your modest proposal that there be a fine of $250 if someone's involved using a cell phone on a public roadway and they cause an accident or make a mistake?
The biggest opposition comes from people who say, why do you single out cell phones? Why not all those other things? What if you had a freestanding DVD player on the seat beside you? What if your coffee turns over and you grab for it or books fly off your seat? There's so many things that could distract you, cause you to have an accident. Why single out cell phones? And I have no excuse for singling them out except that I think a huge body of literature exists in my own experience. I ask anyone who doubts that cell phones are a major problem, just go and watch traffic quietly from some street corner for an hour someday and see if you don't verify that the worst mistakes are made by people who are talking on a phone. So there's this it's an old problem in American law. It's called no panaceism. If you make any proposal at all that doesn't solve every possible problem, people say it's not good enough. Go back to the drawing board. They don't like partial solutions. I agree. Distracted drivers are the category. I just think cell phones are such an important distraction that we need to address them. And for the reason that I mentioned earlier, young people are already well known to cause a very disproportionately high percentage of fatal accidents. And young people, as somebody just said a bit ago, are addicted to cell phones. And by not doing something about driving and cell phones, we are just inviting massive trouble.
Now, there are various things that people who have these sort of ideas do about them. Some people organize. Some people try to get their legislators to do something. What do you suggest?
I believe in the marketplace of ideas. I've put an idea out there. It's in the marketplace. If people like it, presumably they will pick it up, modify it, do something with it. I may make an appearance at the Champaign City Council meeting or at the county board meeting. I do think that notification is important, and my article did say every road leading into Champaign County. I believe this should be a county ordinance, that no cell phone use on our roads, if accompanied by traffic violations or accidents, will go unnoticed. And I do think that signs should warn people all over our towns and on the roads leading into our county that we do fine you $250 if you make another traffic mistake or have an accident while on the phone. That's my idea. It's out there. It's ready, I think, for debate. In the meantime, as I said, this is Christmas and New Year's. I really hope that people listening to this program will consider making a decision. You don't have to answer the phone. You don't have to make a call while you're driving. You don't have to be talking while you're walking across the street. No call I can think of is so extraordinarily urgent that you can't also be a safe pedestrian and a safe driver at the same time that you decide whether to deal with this call. You'll be calmer, as someone suggested. Maybe we'd all be better off if we stopped trying to be super people. And I think we'd all be safer if one at a time we all agree to stop this attractive nuisance and give up talking and driving. But in the meantime, I really think we will really do it, as with seatbelts. I don't know about you, but I first routinely put on a seatbelt when it became the law. And frankly, I was in an accident once on snow in a little lightweight car. And when I thought I was going to hit a tree, I was very glad I had the seatbelt on. But what I was really amazed with was how important it was, even when I hit a snowbank. The momentum of a person in a car, we were fools not to have seatbelts on all those years. But you know what? It was the law that finally got us all to do it. We're better off for it. And like the Danes, we should see a good idea and embrace it. And we should all encourage each other to be a little calmer, a little more sensible, to be better drivers. Enjoy our cell phones, but also enjoy our driving. Don't try to mix them.
We're at the end of our time with David Eisenman, who's been our guest today, talking about his modest proposal for a $250 fine if you make a mistake on a roadway, either walking, driving, bicycling, or whatever, and also on a cell phone. We'll leave the topic today. Thanks to all of our callers. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I'd like to take a moment to thank people who have contributed to this program all of this year. As guests, all of our guests are volunteers. None are paid for this. I also am a volunteer host, and I appreciate the people who agree to come and share their ideas, to talk about their own faith experiences, to talk about ethical issues, value issues, their own spirituality on the air. And I appreciate also the many people who have called and asked questions or made comments, and that makes this a very interesting program, at least for me. Keeping the Faith is sponsored each week by the University YMCA. The Y thanks all the people who've contributed to that nonprofit charitable organization over this past year. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Thanks to the generosity of listeners, 2011 has been another year filled with headline-making news from around the world and inspiring musical performances. With your help, we pledge to continue that tradition in 2012. As the month ends, please make a tax-deductible gift to support WILL at willpledge.org. You'll hear your investment every time you listen. And thank you.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel. You're a monster, Mr. Grinch. Your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is full of spiders. You've got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole. You're a vile one, Mr. Grinch. You have termites in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile, Mr. Grinch. Given the choice between the two of you, I'd take the seasick crocodile. You're a foul one, Mr. Grinch. You're a nasty, wasty skunk. Your heart is full of unwashed socks. Your soul is full of gunk, Mr. Grinch. The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk. You're a rotter, Mr. Grinch. You're the king of sinful sots. Your heart's a dead tomato splotched with moldy purple spots, Mr. Grinch. Your soul is an appalling dump heap, overflowing with the most disgraceful assortment of deplorable rubbish imaginable, mangled up in tangled up knots. You nauseate me, Mr. Grinch, with a nauseous super nos. You're a crooked, jerky jockey, and you drive a crooked hoss, Mr. Grinch. You're a three-decker sauerkraut and toadstool sandwich with arsenic sauce.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.